We have work session, Senate Bill 1275, followed by a public hearing, possible work session, House Bill 3428 and 2052. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 1275. Mr. Warner, we have a couple of amendments.
Mr. Chair, you directed us to draw two amendments, which are really options in terms of how to phase in Senate Bill 1275's move toward a single sales factor formula for corporate apportionment purposes. The Dash 2 amendments treat all industry the same. They don't make the distinction between manufacturing and non-manufacturing that was made in the Dash 1 amendments. And then they phase in over a five-year period a movement toward a 100% sales apportionment formula. So it begins in the year 2001, and it goes from 50%, what it currently is now based on sales, to 60%. And then in 2002, it goes to 70%, and then to 80%, and so on for a five-year phase-in up to 100%. The reasoning behind the change from the 12th that we had in the Dash 1 amendment, based on the Department of Revenue's recommendations, it would be a lot cleaner to have these with no decimal points, we have a straight percentage. This does reduce the phase-in period from 6 years to 5 years. There is a revenue impact statement with that, and it's under the Dash 2, 1275-2. And for the 99-01 period, the revenue reduction would be $6 million. This compares with a $10 million reduction under the Dash 1 amendment. The reason why it's slightly less is because the service-producing sectors, which went immediately to the sales apportionment formula under Dash 1, do have a slight negative impact because there are, particularly in the financial service sector, there is a slight reduction in tax liability. So this results in a slightly lower revenue impact of $6 million, and everybody stays in at the same rate. The revenue impact in 2001-2003 is $57 million. So those are the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 3 amendments retain the distinction between manufacturing and non-manufacturing, and direction was to define manufacturing much more clearly, something that the Department of Revenue could work with. Their concern was they would end up in litigation as to who's a manufacturer and who's not a manufacturer. So, what we've done is use some language that actually came from the City of New York, and that's in the Dash 3 amendments. You can see under Section 3, manufacturer means a manufacturer who is engaged in manufacturing and who, and then lists four criteria there, gross receipts, payroll, tangible personal property, and it also defines manufacturing as transforming one or more raw or finished physical materials and or machinery so on into a new product, possessing a new name, nature, and use. So it's quite very specific about what manufacturing is rather than relying on standard industrial classification, for example. That was the definitions we used for the revenue impact. And again, I'll emphasize what I had said earlier. The revenue impact estimates are based on voluntary identification on the part of corporations on the tax returns as to what industry. So there could be some differences here once we got down to a very specific kind of definition, such as we have in the Dash 3. We also I interpreted the direction on the amendments to use the five-year phase-in under the Dash 3 amendments as well. So it has a five-year phase-in period going from 50 to 100% in the five increments, just as the Dash 2 do. And the revenue impact is minus $11 million in 99-01, basically the same as the Dash 1s, and then minus $77 million in the 01-03 period. The last comment, Mr. Chair, and this was from Senator Beyer, had asked us to look into the notion of some minimum tax, that would be an option, would be to go to some minimum franchise fee for corporations. Currently, we have a very nominal fee for filing corporations. But another approach that may get at Senator Byers' issue in terms of firms not having any tax liability that had no sales tractor yet had a presence in the state would be to go to less than 100%. So you could go to 90% or 95%, still have some of the basic policy, but stop short of 100%, because you would have some liability if a company, for example, had a large or some payroll and property presence and no sales in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. Well, we have before us the dash 3, dash 2. Desire to have some discussion.
I would say Representative Wild, 2 is Mr. Chair. That is what I would say.
And the dash 2 is treating all
with the
sectors equally?
Extended phase-in period. I think the fiscal impact is very palatable. And yet we can still get to where people want to get.
Sends a good signal.
Yes.
Other comments, Senator Beyer?
Actually, probably, since phase-in is going to be over 5 years anyway, probably more politically palatable, noting the objections we have from, I guess it was ESCA last time, trying to do that. It is cheaper.
Senator Hartung.
Senator Barr, so you are speaking in favor of the dash 2 amendment?
I think so.
So I gather that. Well, most important to me is that we get something going in the same the message, and because of the revenue shortage that we're facing now and we'll face in the future, I'm in favor of the dash because of the phase-in and the cost of it, but what's most important, I want to get something on the books to send a signal that we're open for business, we want to do business. We've got a great infrastructure out there now, and we need to build on it because it can come apart pretty easily if there isn't the right incentives to come forward and do business. And just the thing that occurred to me today, I was my guest today, an individual who is a commercial realtor in our Dolphin Valley out there, and I commented to him, I said, I read in the paper where in Washington County we have 7 new hotels, and he said, back on my property, the third one is just opening up. And of course, those were all projected and built during the time when high-tech and Nike and everyone else was really running hot. They slowed down, didn't go in the tank, but they slowed down. And so now, in my opinion, it's not only appropriate, but it's essential that we send out this message that we want you to come to Oregon and in business.
Did that pass the Trade and Economic Development?
Yeah, irrespective of signs that we made that the same this message.
Senator Beyer?
Mr. Chair. I think one of the things that's important, I'm not exactly sure how we do this, is that we're sort of betting on the come a little bit, saying this will put us in a better position long term than a fairer tax system. We have to figure out some way to make sure this message gets out. If we just pass it and it doesn't get picked up, or we don't advise our economic development department or somebody promote this a little bit, it won't do much good, and all we'll end up with in 6 years is minus 135. I think we need to do something about it. And I guess that's not our issue in this committee, but I think it's one that the active leadership that you maybe talk about a little bit as you explore that. The other one, I think there is an issue, and we need to make the decision with our eyes open, that this will mean that some Oregon businesses that have no sales in state will not pay corporate income tax, which is probably not a significant number, but it will be some. I've talked with Paul and played around with Dexter Johnson and, mentally with some ideas, and I just couldn't come up with an easy way to get to the minimum tax. Right? That's a reality of the system that we're dealing with.
Appreciate that. Senator Starr, do you have a preference?
I do. But we're not going there.
You like the other one?
some value in doing this more rapidly. But I will support the back two amendments and believe that that does give us time to actually build some new business as we are looking ahead to the final phase-in of this program. And I think it's a good way to go.
Well, I thank you. Ready, Senator Wild?
Yes.
You will move the dash two amendment to SB 1275.
Senator Wild moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1275. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the amendment is agreed to. Senator Wild,
I move SB 1275 as amended to support a due pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves Senate Bill 1275 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byers?
Aye.
Senator Hartung?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator
Wild? Aye.
Votes aye. Senate Bill 1275 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1275. And to do that, I want to thank all those who came here and testified and provided us the opportunity to be helpful, and we hope it is. Also, I want to thank Mr. Warner for going through the definitions of manufacturing and so forth, and I'm sure that will be useful in the House discussion, I would think. So, thank you for your time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as a
Senator Hartung,
as a way of explaining my vote, I voted aye because I have great confidence that because of all of the heavy upfront work done by the chairman, this will be communicated properly. And, you know, I really, and seriously now, Senator Byers makes a good point, I think, about what a poor job we did communicating with the citizens of the state on school reform. For instance, we spent some money last session, and I don't think it did a lick of good, but this is a little different than what I like about what we have just done. The word gets out pretty fast. I mean, because this is the private sector for profit, you know, unlike running a school district or statewide school system. So, I mean, we need to look to the industry to get the word out, but I think they will find out, those that have an interest in it, because it is, you know, a great incentive for the private sector.
Well, I thank you for that comment, and I would agree particularly with the second half with respect to communication. I have long thought that even though we like to give ourselves these gratuitous pats on the back for our economic development department, it is my view that most corporations of any size that choose to settle in a particular state do their own homework and are not necessarily, their decision isn't made by some sales pitch made at a dinner. It is made by intensive research as to the tax structure and other things that make a state receptive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not in favor of producing a whole lot of brochures to advertise this, but I agree with you. I think the word will get out and it'll be positive.
Mm-hmm.
And because I want this to be successful, Senator Byer will carry this on the Senate floor.
And all we need to do is find, let's see, 2, 4, 5, 11 more votes.
Not a problem.
Not a problem.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Warren. We'll now move to a public hearing on House Bill 3428.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Meyer.
Right on the chin. That's okay.
Okay.
I know.
I'm trying to get into the meeting here. I could get all of that. It's
been a while.
Ooh.
Finally.
Senate Bill, or excuse me, House Bill 3428A engrossed deals with the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Act. It's basically a housekeeping bill to clarify some of the language and add some definitions. This was passed last session, and in effect it gives school districts use of the state bond rating in hopes that that will save them some interest costs on bonds that they wish to issue. And I think the proponents here can fill in some of the details that you may be interested in.
Okay, so Chuck Smith and Cynthia Burns, could you come forward, state your name for the record, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chuck Smith, and I'm the debt manager for the Oregon State Treasury, and with me is Cynthia Burns with the Department of Justice. During the last legislative session, the legislature and the state treasurer worked together create a program to assist schools, and that program was the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Act. And the key purpose of the program was to help schools reduce bond interest costs and thereby reduce local property taxes to support those bonds. Lawmakers responded to that concept by passing H.J.R. 71, which was referred, a constitutional amendment referred to the voters on November 1998, and that was passed overwhelmingly at the election. Essentially what this does is it allows qualified school districts to use the state's full faith and credit obligation. The state has a strong bond rating of AA. Most school districts in the state, approximately two-thirds of them, are really unrated. So when they come to market, by using this particular program, they can achieve a AA rating on their bonds, which means lower interest costs, which means lower property taxes to support that bond. This program was launched and is in operation. We launched it in January this year. So far, there's been 17 districts that have qualified. Five districts have issued bonds for more than $18 million. In the next month, five additional school districts that are qualified will be coming to market, and we feel that this is going to add additional momentum to a new program as the word gets out. The Oregon House of Representatives passed House Bill 3428 by a 51-1 vote in April.
58-1.
Excuse me. 58-1. I can't even read my own words here. Thank you, Senator.
It was a close vote. That's all he
wanted. It wasn't close.
It wasn't a landslide.
House Bill 3428 before you is really a clarification and to help especially with a certain type of refunding called advance refunding that was clearly contemplated in the constitutional amendment but wasn't incorporated directly into the statutes that were passed to implement the constitutional amendment. So we're here before you today to make those kind of technical corrections. And with me, as I mentioned, is Cynthia Burns from the Attorney General's Office. And Cynthia can provide all the legal details behind any of the changes, Mr. Chair, if you care to go through those.
Well, I would like you want to go fast. But, however, what did we miss last time? And also, does it have any impact on those who have already issued bonds?
The answer is the second question, Mr. Chair, is no, it has no impact. What we missed was a very clear reference to an advance refunding statute. An advance refunding is a mechanism that allows school districts to reduce the cost of their outstanding bonds when interest rates decline. And unfortunately, the exact referral to the advance refunding statutes was not included in the original statutes implementing the constitutional amendment.
Okay. Any questions? Sorry to take half the time, but it's always good to come along. We are in public hearing. Can you hand me that little buggy? I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3428, and I will open a work session on House Bill 3428.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3428A to the floor to be passed.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 3428A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? If not, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Having received the majority vote, HB 3428 will be passed forward with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a carrier? Oh, Senator Starr looks like he really is dying to do this, so Senator Starr will carry this.
Yeah.
We will close the work session on House Bill 3428, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2052. And we have absolutely no one signed up to testify. This is really a sad day. We can't even get someone to come before us. Let's see, where's Madill? Here we go. Well, you may introduce it.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2052 is a technical correction bill. Last session, when working on the legislature passed Measure 50 implementing legislation, there was language that was taken out of the school distribution formula, and to take out the language that dealt with Measure 5, and then inadvertently the language wasn't replaced that would deal with Measure 50. What happens here is that this deals with what's included as local revenue, property tax local revenue in the school distribution formula. Without this language, a school district may not use all of its property tax authority or may not use any of it. And consequently, the formula would still say the school district should have so much money that there isn't any local property tax portion to meet that formula total, so that it would all have to come from state dollars.
Oh.
This bill is the first language that says that if the school district doesn't use its property tax levy or not the full amount, then for purposes of the school distribution formula, it still assumes that for local revenue in the formula, that all of their property tax authority is used. That way, a school district cannot levy less than its authority and have state dollars shipped from other school districts the school district that isn't using its full authority.
Well, this is, Steve, the effect of this is just to encourage them not to under-recover.
Yes.
Any other questions?
No question. Well, we shall close the public hearing on HB 2052, and we will open a work session on HB 2052.
I move HB 252 to the floor with a BPAS recommendation.
You mean HB 2052?
Yeah, what did I say, 250?
252.
Okay.
Senator Hartung has moved House Bill 2052 to the floor with a DuPont's recommendation. Any discussion? Objection? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Burr?
Aye.
Senator Hartung?
Aye.
Vice Chair Brown?
Aye.
Chair Miller?
And a motion. Senator Hartung will carry, and having received the necessary majority vote, House Bill 2052 will pass forward with a DuPont recommendation. We will close the public hearing or the work session on HB 2052. And if there's no further business coming forward to the Senate Revenue Committee, we will be adjourned. So we're out of here.